The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of ParaX, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Explicit content may be heard throughout this podcast. Listening discretion is advised.
Well, hello, are you para-geeksters? It is the second week of the new year, and we have a wonderful, wonderful guest. We have author, actress, Leanna Renee Heber. So stay tuned, listen in. If you have any future questions for her, you're more than welcome to ask. If not, well, ask some of my other guests. Go to Exploring the Paranormal Perspective Facebook page, or you can go to the email at epp_podcast@geeksparanormal.com. Send me your questions, but make sure you go to the Facebook page to see who we have coming up. And without further ado, the show.
Hi, how are you?
By the way, good. How are you? You've been busy.
I have so many books due in a short amount of time. And I just said yes to something else because I don't know how to say no. But I know we all know this feeling. Every creative person knows this feeling. Yeah.
I like what you have on your walls. And I like
lamp. Thank you. I try to stay on brand. So these are my books here. And the poster for my very first series. With a little bit of, you know, just got to have a little bit of a vampire in the background on the other side.
Yes, I see that too. I read your first book. I got so into your book that I got behind on the show I was supposed to do tonight.
Well, bless you. That's very kind of you. This one, The Spectral City, is that the one?
Yes. Yes.
I love this series so much.
This series. You like to go by Leanna Renee Heber, don't you, when it comes to your books?
I do, because there's actually a story of why I... There's actually sort of a paranormal story of why I go by all three names. So we can get into that if you want.
Yes,
because, but it does differentiate me from my professional actor name via my union.
Thank you so much for giving me some of your time tonight.
I'm so glad to be here. Thank you so much.
And it was so awesome meeting you.
We had such a good time. I'm so glad. It's so wonderful to be able to meet someone before we do an interview. It's just sort of like that. You know, I mean, I love the virtual world that we live in that can connect people from around the world, but there's something to be said for that in person.
Exactly. It's like whenever I met Tom online and then he introduced you to me and I'm like, oh, she's pretty cool. I really like her. And just reading over your stuff, because I hadn't talked to you yet.
Right, right.
And then meeting you in person, it was just an instant. And I was like,
absolutely. Oh. Well, we knew right away that we had so many common interests. So
yes, definitely. And I still have, and I still wear, it goes on my bag, but since you were on tonight, I decided to wear the medal. You made me.
Well, you earned it. You earned it. You worked so hard.
Thank you. Oh gosh. I feel like we'll go on that one after we get pre-recorded.
Oh. Right, right. Fair.
But yes, and I will let you guys know and show you guys a picture of this in the blog, and you guys will see it on the Patreon page. You know, go view the video or the commercial that I will have out for it. But what is the website they can go to if they want you to make something like
that? That's my Etsy shop, which is Torch and Arrow. So, so it's an Etsy shop, Torch and Arrow. And I do, neo-Victorian, steampunk, gothic, all kinds of stuff, accessories. I will restore vintage pieces. If I can't restore them, then I take the pieces and do new things with them. So it's been a real, it's been a labor of love that's been really helpful in having an online marketplace where also my, you can get signed books there too.
Right. And when she talks about signed books, because she's an author, we're going to talk about her series that she's got going on right now called The Spectral City. And it is called The Spectral City Series, right?
Mm-hmm, correct.
Okay. But right off the bat, you really caught my attention with this book because it started off with a ghost, not an actual person. But the way this happened, and there are going to be spoilers because I want to talk about this book, y'all. but just at the very end of that one section, she gets trapped. And it was just an amazing, like, oh my God, what's going on here? And then you get introduced to the person that she's kind of attached to, which is her family. Now, in going into this and seeing how detailed you went into this, did you research all of this stuff? Is this stuff kind of true, sort of, or is this stuff that came out of just ideas in your head?
The series itself is set in a realistic 19th century New York City. So I, in working on this series, as with all of my books, I did a great deal of research throughout the past 20 years on 19th century London and 19th century New York City. I went to London to study for my first series, which the Strangely Beautiful Saga, which is there on the wall. Those were my first novels that I published in 2009. So I've been publishing now for over a decade. And when it came to the Spectral City series, I had this wealth of knowledge that I'd been accruing for, you know, a long time about the 19th century in general. But when I moved to New York City in 2005, I needed we need a job. And so as a career actress, as well as a writer, I thought a good job to do, to go after was a tour guide job, because I enjoy the concept of being a tour guide. I'd been a tour guide in other cities I'd lived in before. And I also knew that in researching all I needed to know as a tour guide, it was going to help me for the books I knew I wanted to set in New York. So I really try to think about being a bit of a tour guide for the reader and guiding them through, you know, historic New York. When it comes to the characters, most of my main characters are characters that I've created, but they're based on interests of the time period. So the fact that I have, you know, a group of basically ghost detectives, both some alive and some not alive, is definitely something that's playing off of the 19th century obsession with talking with spirits and playing off of spiritualism and just making that very real for my characters and making that very real for the audience. The characters that are in Spectral City have been with me since 2011. So the characters in this series appear in two other series. And so they've been with me a long time. They feel like family friends. And I hope that that kind of familiarity kind of comes across so that you feel just that you're sort of welcomed into the family in that regard. So Maggie Haythorne, the ghost who disappears at the beginning of the book, she's been a long time associate of this family. And so the idea of creating a situation where a ghost then is in danger, for me, was an interesting concept. How do you terrorize the already dead? Mm-hmm. How do you make a suspenseful situation out of an already, you know, predetermined paranormal issue? So for me, that was a fun question to ask, because I've been covering different elements of ghost stories in every single book that I write, in every single series that I write. All of my work has ghosts in them one way or another. And how much of a role they function depends on the series, but they're almost always the ones I choose to really focus on tend to be friendly ghosts that are there to help the living. And so there's an ongoing dialogue between this world and the next through all of my books. And that's just a personal preoccupation. Not only was the 19th century interested in that, I was interested in it too, in trying to figure out, well, where is that line between, you know, the soul and the body and all of that, all of that wonderful existential stuff. So, you know, creating an action adventure narrative that's still dealing with existential questions. I then can pepper in some fun real life characters. Teddy Roosevelt shows up in the Spectral City, you know, as a force of nature, thrilling. Because who wouldn't, you know, it's explained in the book why he shows up. He was involved in real life. He was involved with the New York City Police Department in the 1890s. Mm-hmm. So the fact that he was moving out of that realm and into a realm of a legislator, he still can't leave well enough alone, which seems very Roosevelt. So definitely I will mention real life things that have happened, but the characters themselves, I want a lot of leeway. I want leeway to be able to make history sort of bend to my needs. So most of my main characters end up being my creation, but they're definitely peppered in all my series with cameos by real people from the times. And, you know, how I talk about the paranormal in this series is very much following the things that I talk about as a ghost tour guide in Manhattan. So there's a lot of real ghost history that infuses this, this, you know, fantastical narrative. So there's really, for me, it's a matter of, okay, how can I make a fun story, but really pay a lot of homage to actual history and then to some of my favorite ghost stories of the city.
Oh my gosh. It was just amazing to see, because I was sitting there reading your stuff and I was researching at the same time going, wait, oh my gosh. Yeah, this is a real place.
I do try to make all my locations real. So all my locations, I try to make sure that there's, especially if I can make a location that you can still visit today. I love being able to talk about the backstory of something like Washington Square Park, which not a lot of people know, that beautiful park with that wonderful Washington Square arch. Well, there's 20,000 human remains underneath it. There's no plaque to it, but it was a potter's field. It was a mass grave for yellow fever and cholera epidemics in the 1700s. And so, you know, there's all of these layers of history that are part of everything, a part of things you can still visit today as a tourist attraction.
And that's a sad thing that it's not as known as it should be, because a lot of our history, like the Tulsa Race Riots down the road. Mm-hmm,
exactly.
I knew nothing about those until six years ago when we were researching the area, because I went and investigated a store there.
Right.
And come to find out, oh my gosh, that store was right near where everything almost happened.
Right.
And I'm like, and then now all you do is hear about the Tulsa Race Riots.
Well, and you should, because, you know, it was one of those things where, you know, again, these were hidden histories for a long time. And our history as a people, as a country, it's very complicated. It's very dark. Yes. It's very bloody. There's a lot of injustice. And you can't shy away from that. You have to talk about it. And that's the role of art too. I mean, I think art has a responsibility, especially if it's historical, to engage with those things and say, hey, this is complicated and we have to fold this in. And so that's why, you know, Watchmen, the series Watchmen, dealing right out the gate with that when this first episode was so important. And it was really, you know, eye-opening for a lot of people that hadn't heard of it before. So I really think that the role of pop culture engaging with those difficult things, I think, is really, really important.
Oh, it definitely is important, especially in this day and age when they're trying to bury history and hide it.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's like, oh gosh, y'all, don't y'all know the story?
You can't. And
doomed to repeat it.
Exactly. Exactly.
Let's not do that.
I'm not interested in that. I'm interested in building a better world. And that only comes from being working with others who are of different backgrounds. I mean, that's my series, you know, even though it's set in the 19th century, you know, it's very diverse. It's it has a lot of people who are fighting for their rights in various capacities, but that's the truth of it. You know, I've had a few reviewers who have said, oh, this is somebody putting a modern, you know, feminist viewpoint on this, or, oh, this is, you know, forced diversity. No, it's New York City, which has always been diverse since the 1600s. So if it wasn't diverse, it's inaccurate. Right. So, you know, and in any, you know, all of my stuff, whether it's London or whether it's New York, these are cities that have been crossroads of the world and places of massive amounts of different types of immigration from people from all kinds of different backgrounds. And of course, also everyone has always existed, whether it's, you know, whether it's a gender identity, whether it's a sexual orientation, anything, like people have always existed, whether or not they've been comfortable talking about that or being public about it. That's depends on the era and the country and the background and all of that, but people have always existed. So the fact that my, you know, cast is a wide range of groups of people, well, it reflects my circle of friends now. And it also reflects the multicultural city that New York has always been.
Oh yeah. I mean, that's the port that everybody came in on.
Exactly.
Mean, my dad's name is written on the documentation in New York.
Yep. So yep. Like,
come on, guys.
I know. And a lot of folks in this country would do well to remember that they were coming as immigrants as well. And so that's,
exactly.
You know,
we're all immigrants to this country.
You know, and then we have to engage with the fact that, yeah, we were settlers and there was, you know, a lot of bloodshed. Violence against the Native Americans. Yeah. You know, so we have to talk about that too. And all of this stuff is very complicated and people don't necessarily want to talk about it. But, yeah. You know, especially if you're engaging with a haunted narrative, you have to talk about it because otherwise you're kind of whitewashing it in a way that's not going to help anybody.
Exactly.
Now we're going to be right back.
Hey guys, it's Johnny Hauser here. I'm in the attic of the Villisca Axe Murder House. Stuff's getting weird. Skulls creeping me out. I just wanted to take a second to tell you my buddy, my BFF, my bestie, Shauna's got a new podcast out. It's called Exploring the Paranormal Perspective. She's going to be talking about monsters, mysteries, aliens, ghosts, true crime, paranormal, everything that's interesting. You know, you need to listen to it. Para X Radio Network, 8 p.m. Central Time, Wednesdays. Tune in.
Millions of people are affected by the Para X bug.
I realize that it is something that will stay with me for the rest of my life and long into the afterlife as well.
If you have the Para-X bug, there is hope.
With a nightly visit to the Para-X website and intensive past life regression therapy, I can control it.
Even with the Para-X bug, I can still lead an active life of radio show hosting, paranormal investigating, evidence checking, attending conferences, book writing, keeping up with the latest technology, and still keep my 40-hour-a-week day job.
If you think that you have the Para-X bug or know someone who might, visit para-x.com. And remember, you are not alone.
I am not alone.
I
am not alone.
The Para-X bug may cause the urge to chase shadow people, visit exotic haunted locations, adopt a pug wedgie, or spend all of your time trying to figure out the laws and principles of paranormal investigation. Listening to Para-X may increase these effects.
Sudden visions of full-body apparitions or feeling the covers being pulled off you in the middle of the night by unseen hands may also be signs of exposure to the Para-X bug.
The use of Para-X may be habit-forming, and an overwhelming desire to provoke spirits may be a serious side effect. If these symptoms last more than 4 hours, you should quickly consult a trusted witch and have her cast a "What the hell are you thinking?" spell on you. If symptoms persist, please contact the Para-X Radio Network Homeland Security Team for further instructions.
The Para-X bug may cause urges for late-night speaking with spirits and ghosts. Listening to Para-X may increase these effects. Overwhelming desire to try provoking a spirit may be a serious side effect. Those with Para-X bug effects lasting more than 4 hours should consult Para-X or see a professional. Sudden outbursts at the mention of orbs may be a sign of exposure to the Para-X bug. Use of Para-X may be habit-forming. Use caution when engaging in Para-X chat.
Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
Welcome back to Exploring the Paranormal Perspective.
Exactly. And the more you hide it, the more it just disappears. And mm-hmm. that's not what people are screaming for. They don't want it to disappear, but yet they want certain parts of it to disappear. And you can't do that. You've got to have it as a whole, because if you don't have it as a whole, you're just lying about one or the other.
Exactly. Exactly. And that truth is not going to stay hidden. You might as well reckon with it. As complicated as it is, I think people just, you know, well, plenty of folks just don't want to have any kind of sense of guilt or any kind of sense of ownership or whatever. But I would much rather have a better understanding, comprehensive understanding as an artist, especially.
Exactly. You know? As an artist, as someone that researches history, mm-hmm. I mean, especially listening to my dad and my Oma about my great Opa, who was actually put in a concentration camp.
Oh my goodness.
I only heard what they told me.
Right.
And my Oma actually got shot in the hand helping American soldiers.
Wow.
By an American soldier.
Wow.
During World War II. But wow. My great Opa, I believe he was 30, two or 33 when he was taken into the concentration camp. And that was because he trusted a friend telling the friend that he didn't like Hitler and was just talking bad about Hitler. And
right.
ended up in the concentration camp for 10 years. And it's like, oh my gosh. And whenever I researched my ancestry and found that out, I was like, oh my gosh, 10 years. Can you imagine what he went through? Oh, well, he was just in the side where the Germans that didn't agree with, no. You know, they experimented on him and did everything else, just like they did to everybody else.
It's just, and that's the thing too. It's, you know, the scope of that, of authoritarianism and fascism, it doesn't spare anybody. So, you know, that's what, you know, especially in our current climate, we have to be all the more aware of these things, especially those of us who have German heritage, myself included, you know, and the fact that, you know, even though, like we were talking earlier, the fact that our ancestors were, you know, my folks were in this country in the 19th century, early 20th, long before those conflicts. But it doesn't mean that there's not still things that we should be learning about and taking from that and just, you know, and reckoning with.
And it's sad because you look at the history in Germany and they, what did they do? They burned a lot of their papers. They burned a lot of the records that they had. Right. So you can only go so far back.
Right. Right.
And it's sad. You don't want that to happen, especially when you're trying to figure stuff out.
Yeah. And so that's that kind of thought about how can we be reminding ourselves as a culture about some of these things, as a society about some of these things. And I don't necessarily dwell on the difficult things. We acknowledge them, but then my characters are working actively to try to create an equal, loving sort of found family resolution to some dark issues that I bring up in this book. But I, you know, at the end of the day, all of my books deal with hope and trying to live into that hope and live into that better world, because I do think that it's possible. And I think that, you know, there were a lot of fights that people were fighting in the 19th century that were successful and gained us all rights in the 20th century, but those fights were going on long before the 20th century. Oh, yeah. So it's a lot of our modern world was really birthed in the late 19th century. So that's why I choose to write in that era, because it's the real crucible of our modern world. And it's where a lot of the conflict and the discussions were happening and the fights were happening. And the mindset was beginning to change towards a better world, all while industry and innovation was happening at lightning speed. So that, you know, I'm very interested in talking about the advent of the telephone and the advent of electricity and all those things and humans trying to adjust to all of that, has been fun, because some of my characters are very pro progress and some of them really, really despise the telephone, kind of like, you know, kind of like I have a love hate relationship with social media, you know, like we all do, right?
Yes, it's like, oh, I really don't want to go on there today, but I need to promote stuff, so
but we have to. It's yep, absolutely.
I gotta get on there. I totally understand, but I'm reading and looking over this stuff, and I love the way you put it, truths into perspective in your books. And now the mediums and the clairvoyance that you have in your books, and does this come from
some of it? You know, this book in particular, this series in particular, the Spectral City series, I finally was like, okay, I'm just gonna write my personal truth. And there's a lot of things that Eve experiences as the heroine of this series that I experience. Chronic migraines that can be really debilitating. That comes from personal experience. I actually had a couple of migraine sufferers who wrote me saying, do you have these, right? Because this is really realistic. And I think, yes, friends, yes, we are in the fold together. And the also having certain sensitivities, do I have them as as vibrantly and as fully as Eve does? No, I do not. And actually, I'm thankful for that, because I wouldn't frankly want them I wouldn't want that. I mean, she had to really learn how to deal with it as a child. It almost killed her. So, you know, I was never that open, frankly, to things. But by the time we get to the third book in the series, which is called A Summoning of Souls, the dedication in that book is to the spirit world, may we continue to be a force for good, because I do really believe that the spirit world is very active in my world. And it's always been very active in my perception. I've been very drawn to certain places, certain stories, certain locations, certain buildings, in ways that I can only really describe as either a past life sort of discussion happening with me in real time now, or a bit of, you know, mediumship that's happening. There's just too many uncanny things that happen. There's too many things that I've stumbled across that, or something that I ended up writing that turned out to be true. And it's just happened so often that I just roll with it. And I do sort of consider when I sit down to write that I really do kind of go into a bit of a trance state, sort of a bit of a, you know, the people who are gifted will sometimes call it automatic writing, in that regard. And I don't, you know, I don't quite go as deep as some of that, where I won't remember what's happening around me, but I really do feel like some of that stuff, I'm tapping into something else that is around me and that wants to have their story told. And I try to have some boundaries with that. Like, Eve sets very clear boundaries in her, in this series, and all her fellow mediums do. They have to set boundaries, because we do as people have to set boundaries with our own energies, what we're capable of, what we can and can't take on. And by the time we get through to Summoning of Souls, I go ahead and teach a psychic shielding lesson, because I just thought, you know what, here's a useful thing. And this might come in handy for anybody who's particularly sensitive. Here's how you can protect yourself. You know, it's similar to putting on your oxygen mask before helping someone else. If you lose pressure in an airplane cabin, it's the same thing of like taking care of yourself before you take care of others. In that regard, there's a certain amount of that is true when you're talking about human limitations, dealing with psychic energies. So that's the long answer to your question. Is that, yeah, it comes from some real stuff.
I wish
I'm heightening it for dramatic interpretation. So it's a lot of my experiences are far more mundane than what I describe in this novel. So like no one wants a boring day in the life. So I sort of spice it up a bit for the action adventure aspect of the series.
And spice it up, you say. Wow. Because her grandmother is rather interesting. Her friend Clara, the bishops.
I love the bishops. So Clara is actually the heroine of my Eternophiles series. And I loved her so much as a character that I just had to kind of continue using her as a bit of a sort of spectral auntie in a way, but one that's kind of like her own force of nature. I like the idea that there are some people in Eve's life that are very intimidating, even though she's as gifted as she is, that there are people in her life that are like their own
force.
They take up a lot of room psychically. And I really love that Clara kind of graduated from sort of fumbling heroine in the Eternophiles series to really kind of coming to her own as I went forward with her, because I love this whole family. I've loved them and I've been with them for a while. You don't have to have read my other books to dive into this, but if you read my Magic Most Foul books, and if you read the Eternophiles books, you'll notice that, here we go. This is a bit of a family legacy at this point.
Oh yeah. I was like, I'm going to have to probably start at your very first book and just read all of them.
I won't say no. I appreciate that. You'll have a lot of backstory in everything. So you'll see that things are sort of prequels to other things in some ways. So again, I try to make sure everything stands alone, but it is all part of the Heberverse, as it were.
Right. Well, it takes a lot to grab my attention in books here lately. I think a lot of it is due because I don't have a lot of time to read them.
Yeah.
So I listened to a lot of audibles. And when I found that you have audibles along with the books, I was like, oh, so I'm grabbing those too, but I really would want some paperbacks. Cause once I get some shelves put up back here, I'm going to have some paperbacks up there.
Yeah. Not everything is in audio yet. We're hoping, you know, that I am traditionally published. So when you're traditionally published, the rights for audio are held usually by the publishers. And sometimes they'll be able to sell those and get audio editions made. There is an audio edition of the first Spectral City book, but they didn't continue and do the rest of them. So eventually when I'm able to get the rights back, I will narrate them myself. But it's a matter of, that's honestly been a matter of time.
Hey y'all, Exploring the Paranormal Perspective will be right back after this commercial break.
Kimberly Juarez with Cat Paranormal of Minnesota.
Hi, I'm Willow Lehman Shunt, psychic medium, Dark NOLA Paranormal, New Orleans.
And I'm Jerry Ayers with Supernatural Investigators of Minnesota, and together we are The Calling. Every Wednesday night, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time and 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, only on ParaXRadioNetwork.com.
Are you haunted by shadow people in the middle of the night?
Do you secretly love all things creepy and spooky, enjoying ghost stories and horror fiction from the best storytellers?
Do you have a true ghost experience you want to share, but no one will believe you?
If yes, listen to the professionals on What Are You Afraid Of? Horror Paranormal Show, Friday nights at 9 p.m. on ParaX Radio and at www.whatareyouafraidofpodcast.com.
What are you afraid of on ParaX?
Our creepy and demented hosts are on call to provide you with all your spooky needs with true ghost stories, interviews, indie music, and new horror fiction.
We are ready to scare you.
ParaX.
Welcome back to Exploring the Paranormal Perspective.
I do have several editions of things that I am narrating. There's a company called Scribd. So it's scribd.com, and on scribd.com, it's a treasure trove of content. And so I have digital editions as well as audiobook editions of a couple different series there. And I'm going to be continuing the Spectral City series with Maggie, the ghost who you meet in the very beginning of that book. She gets her own series where she is the main character. So rather than just being a ghost, because she really is, she's a force of nature. And by the time you get to the third Spectral City novel, she has a scene that absolutely steals the show. And I had a couple of reviews that said, you know, Maggie almost steals this entire book, but it's used to good effect. So I thought that was actually a good impetus for me to go ahead and spin off a series of novellas, so shorter pieces called the Spirit Suitor series, where Maggie falls in love with an exorcist.
Ooh,
and so it is an adorable ghost exorcist romance, which has been pretty fun. I've had a blast with this because she thinks like, well, okay, I have to possess somebody for this case. But I have to practice possessing somebody. I've never possessed somebody before. Oh, I'll possess Reverend Coronado because, you know, then if something goes wrong, he can get me out. So she's very practical, and then they really like it. So just a very fun scene. It was like the funniest meet cute ever. And then I realized, oh no, I need to have them have their own little series where they go on their own little ghost adventures and detective series. So the Spirit Suitor novellas, continuing the Spectral City stuff, is going to be out with Scribd. It's going to be probably early next year. So probably January, February, maybe February, March. For getting those those will be up, and I'm so excited to do the audiobooks for them because Maggie is so much fun. And so my background in theater is always really fun whenever anyone hires me to be a narrator, I'm very excited.
Oh gosh, it's got to be hard. Well, it would be hard for me because the only accent I know is Southern. I tried to do a New York accent? No, it was a Boston accent in my theater days in college. And whew, let me tell you, it was a little
rough. That's a hard one. I didn't realize when I just did, I have a Strangely Beautiful novella called A Christmas Carol. So and that's up now on Scribd. And I didn't realize that I had set myself the challenge. You know, I wrote that novella years ago, not thinking about narrating it. And so when I was hired to narrate it, I realized, oh no, I've done a Scottish accent, an Irish accent, a British accent, upper class British, and a Cockney accent, all in like four different lines. And I'm like, what am I doing? Why did I do this to myself? And so, you know, so for better or for worse, I'm sure actual Brits will listen to that and be like, oh, what is she doing?
But won't say you're worse than Dick Van Dyke, though.
I mean, you know, probably not. But I did take a lot of dialect classes during my theater years, and did a lot of British drama. So I've definitely professionally done that often, but you know, you kind of can't psych yourself out when you're sitting in the chair. You just kind of have to sort of trust your gut with it and just roll with it. Go. Hope for the best.
I was actually looking up how to do accents on YouTube, because there's a lot of talented YouTubers out there that can teach you rather well.
Right. Yeah. No, there's definitely, that's, you know, that was not around during my theater days. It's very helpful now. So yeah, I'll be definitely, definitely be looking at some of that into the next series, because there's a couple of things that I'm like, yep, nope, I'm not entirely sure on that. I know it's who it's modeled after. So like, you know, a lot of times I will sort of cast the movie version of the book in my head. So I'll just then sometimes try to find actual clips from that star.
I'm still stuck on Southern. I try, and it just, like, it's hard enough to stay out of the Southern, because I have to talk slower. The faster I talk, the more Southern I get. So
that's the thing. I grew up in rural Ohio, and rural Ohio, Southern Ohio, you know, right across the river from Kentucky. So when you will hear a bit of an accent come out with me, if I've had a little too much to drink, or if I'm really angry. So either of those things. Yeah. But when I went to theater school, I was very much a neutral voice was kind of trained into me. And then the ticks of regionalisms were taken out of me. But I did spend a lot of time in Minnesota. There's moments where that will come in. And then obviously I spent, you know, I've been a New Yorker now for 16 years. So there'll be some things that'll just be very New Yorker. But you know, it's when that comes out, or just little turns of phrase, you know, a lot of sort of, you pick up a lot of Yiddish as a New Yorker, which is great. And because there's nothing like the word schlep when you are trying to like haul things. There's no better word for that. And so, you know, there's just so many things that you don't realize. And so that was a fun thing to put into. I have a novella coming up called Dead Ringer. It's set in 1892 about a telephone operator who has a ghost come through her console and begs for her to solve the murder of her and then prevent another one. And and Lottie Engel she's a German immigrant, and she lives in a boarding house with a lot of Jewish folks who lived in the same city as she did. Wow. And so there's a lot of Yiddish in that book, and it's just fun because it's like, these are things that just New Yorkers, regardless of your ethnic background, you just pick up by being there. And there's just so many wonderful, delightful words. So I'm very excited for Dead Ringer. Is going to come out as a podcast, actually, and that's coming out in early next year. I don't actually have a date for it yet, by a company called Realm FM is doing all kinds of podcast fiction, and I'm so excited about my work with them, because they're going to have a narrator who's going to do all of my many, many different accents in that one. And hopefully it'll be a full cast. I don't know if it's just going to be a single narrator or a full cast. I'm not sure. I hope they do a full cast, because I've got a really colorful cast of very dramatic characters in that one. So that'll be fun. But it's been fun to be writing with an eye to recording. in the past year or so, as I've been doing some shorter form works, both for Scribed and then doing this for Realm with Dead Ringer. It's been very fun to think about, hey, you know what, how's this going to translate into audio? And that's been a fun shift for my process a little bit.
Oh my gosh, that's actually one of my alarms is one of the old time radio podcast theaters. And whenever it goes off, sometimes you'll hear like the gunshot that goes off in the background or the horses that are trotting on the thing. And I'm like, I don't know this one. And I'll sit there and listen to it for a minute. But it's so interesting that it's coming back. A lot of people are actually getting really involved in radio theater. And it's like, great, because a lot of us can't sit there and watch a theater or a movie while we're at work.
Right.
We can listen.
Right. Right. I'm so glad that it's coming back, and whether it's podcasts or whether it's, you know, audiobooks or whether it is the radio drama, I think it's just fantastic because, and for me as a writer, I want people, you know, I just want an audience. I want people to enjoy my work however they want to enjoy it. So I hope that, you know, every bit of access that people can have, whatever kind of version they want to have, I hope that I can have it out there. I don't always have control over that because, you know, I don't always have, you know, my work with Scribed is digital and audio only. So for my friends who want the paperbacks, I'm like, sorry, eventually maybe I'll be able to put out an omnibus of it myself, you know, but in the meantime, I'm just trying to get the next one out and recorded, you know, and making sure I'm continuing to release fresh content. You know, I've published at least a book a year, and diverse smaller things, every year since 2009. So I always want to keep new things coming out.
That's awesome, because I am really into getting books when they come out. Robert Jordan, when he was alive, I would grab every book I could whenever it came
Absolutely.
Out. Absolutely. Passed on. I was so devastated.
I know.
And then I was so amazed at how Brandon Sanderson came in and just
became
Robert Jordan,
picked up where he left off. Pretty amazing.
Exactly. And oh my gosh, I did have to break down and watch the first three episodes of Bullet Time. And
is it good? I haven't gotten to it yet.
A lot of people have given it bad reviews because they want it to be a stickler and stick right into the thing. And the only thing that I have to say bad about it is that Nynaeve was not tugging her braid at all. And it's like, fair. That's something you're really going to have to put in there. And they modernized the cuss words instead of leaving what he had come up with, which I thought was amazing.
Right.
To begin with. But, you know, I can understand a lot of the things that they came up with, and they only changed a little bit of stuff.
That's the thing. It has to change. It's not the same medium. And so people, you know, that's if, you know, I hope that someday I would love for there to be a series or a film of any of my work. And they're going to have to change things, you know, and because it's a different medium. And so nothing directly translates. And so I really hope that people will give things, you know, the credit of like, you're going to have to adapt things. And so I certainly just will be happy, you know, to see something in a different, you know, different groups of artists doing things differently. Definitely. So just, you know, I definitely hope that people will think about that when they're watching something. Yeah, of course, you are protective of the things that you love, but it's inevitably going to have to change. And so it'd be better to just enjoy that for what it is in a new medium.
Well, I love books, but I don't want to see the same exact thing that I just read in live form, because that would kind of be boring to me.
And also too, you have to different people are going to have their own artistic interpretation of that. Like an actor is going to have their own view of that character. And that's going to be just as valid as you as a reader having your idea of that character. So, you know, once it gets out of it becomes a certain amount of subject, you know, art is very subjective. And so, you know, and I think that's the great thing about it is that we don't always have to agree either. That's fine too.
No, you can have your own opinion. That's what's amazing about America.
Yes, exactly.
You can have your own opinion. Because a lot of soldiers died for you to be able to have your own opinion.
Exactly. And let's keep that in mind when we, you know, that's just the difficulty of like trying to make sure that we try to maintain a respectful dialogue. Exactly. That's been the most difficult thing about our current climate is that it just seems like a lot of civility has gone by the wayside, but
a lot of keyboard warriors and not actual face-to-face warriors.
Yep.
Yeah, I noticed that a lot. And it's kind of sad because you don't get the respect that you should get. And a lot of people should get, mm-hmm. especially when debating, because you should be able to debate freely and not be able to mm-hmm. be bullied or feel bullied.
Right, right. Absolutely.
I mean, back in the day, they'd throw fists, but today it's throw words. And it's like, what's your words going to do to me, bud? Sorry. But that's the idea that they get behind it. And that's mm-hmm. why they feel so emboldened to mm-hmm. do and say things disrespectfully over the internet waves. And it's like, oh, you guys suck so bad. But hot politics. Well, sort of back on politics, because I really love the fact that you had TR in the darn book. That was awesome, and how you incorporated him into the ghost precincts. And I'm sitting there going, oh my gosh, that sounds just like him from when they from what they've written about him. I mean, history.
I mean, that's the thing. He's such a larger than life character. So I just really enjoyed, I love bombastic characters, and he's one of them. So, you know, that in some ways, some of that stuff just sort of felt like it wrote itself. So,
right. And bringing John Wilkes Booth's brother into the, well, sort of his building.
Mentioning the fact that Edwin Booth, the Players Club, he was trying so desperately to get respect for actors, because not a lot of people understand how really marginalized actors were. They were disrespected. They were thought to be amoral people. They weren't even able to be buried in churchyards. The little church around the corner, there's actually a film about it, and the Church of the Transfiguration in Murray Hill neighborhood in mid-east Manhattan was, you know, kind of became famous for being a place that actors could be buried in hallowed ground. So it's just, you know, for me as an actor, I'm very interested in thinking about the fact that the 19th century was also responsible for, you know, respecting different types of work as art and as respectful professions. So that's kind of interesting too, is just, you know, I wanted to mention that particular historic building because it's one you can go into, and it's one that's, you know, it's one that I've been into many times, and it's one that's very haunted. So it just felt like it was a fun setting to sort of start this out in a building in an area that is still very much a vibrant part of history, that, you know, is merging these other kind of famous aspects and famous people with some stuff you don't necessarily know.
I had no clue until I read that part, and I was like, wait, and searched up that building. I was like, wow, this really exists. And that was really his. And oh my God, why didn't I know this? I love history, but
that's the thing. We can't
thought about brothers or siblings to
John Wilkes Booth. Right. We can't always know these things too. It's like, that's the great thing about being, you know, being involved in history, is that it's so alive because you're still finding things out. Mm-hmm. There's just, you can't know everything, you know, especially, mm-hmm. you know, as a New York City tour guide, the New York City, I will never be able to cover every single block of New York City. I would never, you know, it is this immense, impossible to keep track of behemoth. And it's, you know, so I'm always learning new things, which is thrilling. And again, I never want to stop learning, because when you think that you're done learning, then I don't think you're still living. So.
Oh no, you're not. Because exactly. And not all people want to keep learning. We keep going back to this part.
It's so important to keep learning, though. It's so good. I mean, it's not only good for your soul, it's good for your brain, you know? So it's good. It's just creates also too, you know, yeah, exactly. Wrinkles in a good way.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was noticing just the other day, I saw an article though, taking was it Jackson's statue out of the, I think it was Jackson's statue, but all the statues anyway. I mean, they're taking all the statues down, and it's like, why? Why are you taking such a beautiful piece of art, regardless of who it's made on and who it is, out of something when this was created to give you the history and to say, oh, hey, who is that guy? I need to look him up.
I think part of it is just that the context isn't clear. I mean, there's, you know, there's a Teddy Roosevelt statue in front of the the Natural History Museum. I understand why they took that out, because there's kind of harmful depictions of Native Americans on that statue. And well, in that case, it's like,
yeah,
you know, on the statue itself. So yeah, it's like, and there's not really a way to provide a full context on that in a way that's really not kind of additionally harmful. So I feel like in some cases, whether it's, you know, these statues were put up to celebrate, you know, things that are harmful. I think in some cases these things are valid to have a discussion about. I'm hopeful that in some cases, some of those statues can be removed and then put into museums with full context. Yes. You know, because I do think we need context. I do think that we can't, you know, but also too, I think that, you know, who we celebrate and who we have statues of should continue to change, though. There should be a you know, all kinds of folks that haven't been honored that should be honored. But I don't know, it's just this stuff is very, very complicated.
It is very complicated. And having those kind of images depicted on a statue, yes, I can understand that concept.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, if you're a learner or someone that wants to research things or a historian buff or anybody like that, you see stuff like that and you're like, oh, let me take a picture of that and Google it and see what I find, you know?
Sure. And I think, but that comes, that's taking for granted that, you know, inquisitive minds will do that, but I don't know that that's, you know, in some cases people don't necessarily look for the context. And so it ends up being more harmful than helpful in some of those regards, but I don't know, this is not, you know, I don't have an answer for this specifically I cross each bridge when you come to it, I guess.
Yeah, well, you got to nowadays anyway, because I mean, with the government going politically correct and all this other stuff, you've got so many things being taken out and new things being put in that you're like, okay, what are we on today?
And all I can try to do is be sensitive to, you know, to these topics and try to, you know, if I'm asked to speak on them, just to sort of, you know, if I have an element of expertise about it, I can speak to that. If I don't, then I will defer to others who have more of a stake in the matter. You know, one of the things I do with all of my books is that I hire sensitivity readers. I think it's a very important thing, you know, as if you're writing outside of your personal experience and say you're writing somebody from a different orientation or a gender identity or racial background or religious background, hiring sensitivity readers is helpful because they'll catch things that you may not have intended on either being offensive or just frankly not correct, and then make that more believable. So I hired a bunch of sensitivity readers for Spectral City because I have all kinds of different folks from different backgrounds. Specifically, you know, I'll mention a couple. My the love interest, the hero, Jacob Horowitz, he's Jewish. I am not Jewish. There's a possibility I might have some Jewish ancestry, but I was not raised to that. And so I hired my friend, Bryna, who's great, great author in her own right. And, you know, worked with her to make sure, I did my own research, but worked with her to make sure that he was ringing true as, you know, someone who was raised in a Reform Jewish background in the 19th century. And so, you know, my rule as a writer is sort of almost the Wiccan rule of harm no other, do what you will. Yes. I'm kind of like, right, you know, I'm like, harm no other, write what you will. That's my thing of like, my foremost calling really is harm no other. I don't want to be, you know, I want to be both culturally and just, I don't know, humanly sensitive to all kinds of different things and realize that my perspective, you know, there's privilege involved in this perspective as well as, you know, just trying to make sure that I'm putting myself in other's shoes, but making sure that I'm doing that via conversations with other people, not just making assumptions. Cause I do think that that's where things go wrong is, you know, and a lot of times authors are afraid to write outside of their perspective. Well, don't be afraid to hire someone who's going to help you not put your foot in your mouth. And, you know, and people say, oh, where do you find these people? Well, actually I'm very blessed to say these people are friends of mine because I have cultivated friendships outside of my perspective because I want to have a dialogue with people who are going to challenge me, who are going to make me think, who are going to help me learn. So I think, you know, for any writer, I definitely think that having as wide a range of people that you interact with, and that, you know, you have, that you can ask questions of respectfully is very, very, very helpful. And then of course, you know, because I'm asking for their time, I do hire them. Mm-hmm. Even though they're my friends, I don't ask them to do emotional labor for free. Because you shouldn't, because it's like, they're taking time to they're taking time to look through stuff. And make sure, you know, that they're essentially an editorial eye on your work. So, but that's been something that's been very, very important for me through every series.
Definitely. Especially when I look at things and do things for others. I've done a lot of things for people for free, a lot of things. And I look back on that and see where they are in my life today. And it's like, were they taking advantage of me back then? Probably.
We have to watch that. I think it's tough though, too, because creatives, all of us, we have limited budgets. We have limited, you know, it's tricky. But we got to try to value everybody's time as best we can.
Definitely. Yes. Because I mean, time is money sometimes to some people. Like Caitlin mm-hmm. from Ghost Brothers told me, time is money.
Yeah, absolutely.
So in your books, do you have a lot of your friends that you surround yourself with in your books, or
are you the type
of author that try not to?
I try not to, mainly because unless there's something very, very specific, I try not to, because I don't want any of my friends to wonder where I drew the line between them and these other fictions. So, you know, I've always just been a rampantly, obsessively creative person. So I don't really necessarily need to pull from real life, other than I'm going to listen to my friends and help inform me about things like worldview and things like that. But, you know, when it comes to the actual characters, there might be some elements here or there, but I really do try to only kind of put things from myself. I definitely have elements of myself in the books. But I definitely don't want people to wonder where they are in my work. Cause I just feel like that's kind of a pressure. And that may change. That may change as I continue to write. There might be somebody who I really feel is kind of a particular inspiration for something as I go. And in which case I will do so with, and I will move forward with love in that regard. And you know, there's definitely nasty elements about things and people I've put into the books, but that's usually more general. That's usually more general stuff of like things in the world that that concern me. And mean people being mean, will inform my mean characters. So,
well, like you said, the Wiccan saying, I go by the do unto others as you would have them do unto
exactly.
you.
So. Exactly. The golden rule. I mean, every faith background has their own take on the golden rule. And I think it's really, really important as an artist to operate under that, but don't be afraid. You know, don't let that hamper you from doing and creating, but just do so realizing that, you know, you do have, you're putting art out there and that people are going to be interacting with it. So I want as many people as possible to feel welcomed by my books and to see themselves. Representation is very important, to see themselves in my books. And to know that, like, you know, I'm, that everyone has something that they're bringing to the table.
Like I said, your book just really nabbed me on the first chapter, and I'm sitting there going, God, I really want to read this, but I got to do this. And
thank you. It's the best compliment when I'm distracted somebody away from things that they have to do. So yes. So sorry.
I take my breaks and I read your book. That's how it is now. Instead of doing my title image that I should have done tonight for my show.
Well, thank you. At least I'm honored that, to be a good, hopefully a good distraction.
Thank you for listening to part one of my interview with author actress Leanna Renee Heber. Stay tuned next week for part two, the finale of her interview. Thank you guys so much. We also have a lot more guests coming up. If you go to my Facebook page, Exploring the Paranormal Perspective, you'll be able to see the guests that I will have coming up. And if you have any questions for them, please feel free to ask, and it'll come out in the interview. So stay tuned. Thank you guys, and have a wonderful rest of your week.